again, everybody, and it's time for the Mainland Podcast. Welcome back for episode number 103, I believe it is, this week. We're here. We're still here. We didn't blow away in Hurricane Irma. And joining, I'm Michael Citro, the managing editor of the Mainland. I would like to welcome in David Rowe, a man who was not thinking that the hurricane was originally headed his way, and then it turned out it was. Dave, how did you make out?
You know what? I'm one of the lucky ones. Not only did I not lose power, I didn't lose internet either. So it was basically it was a free day off for me. It kept going west and west and west, and we were getting a little bit more worried with all of that. Fortunately, the eye stayed to the east of us, and as I'm sure our listeners know, if you're going to be on one side of the hurricane, be on the west side of it. So not so bad here. As a matter of fact, Hermine from last year was worse than what we got from Irma. So very, very lucky up here.
That's right. You're up in the Tallahassee area, and those of us down here in Central Florida got hit pretty good. Although I have to say, amazingly, mainland towers stood tall during the hurricane. We were kind of in a unique spot because we were although it was a little concerning to me because the eye was jogging east there in the last couple of updates before it hit. And you know, you don't want to be right on the east side of that wall, that eye wall. Mm-hmm. But we were between the worst of the eye wall stuff and those squalls that were screaming in off the coast, those really bad ones that were causing mm-hmm. tornadoes and issues like that. We kind of fell right in between in that sweet spot, and we kind of got lucky that way. We had one power flick off and then right back on immediately at 2:30 in the morning, Monday morning, and that was it. I mean, I barely – this is the crazy part because I, on a nice sunny day, if a rainstorm hits or just a normal rain shower hits, I usually lose my DirecTV. I barely lost my DirecTV on Sunday night.
Wow.
It went out a few times, and I allowed my and early in the evening before the eye got really close, we allowed our daughter to stay up late and watch some DVDs because it had gone out. But essentially I watched the weather mostly all night. When we threw a mattress in the middle of the living room because we have a little townhouse, and it's most of the bedrooms have windows right next to the beds, and so I didn't board them up or anything, so we threw a mattress in the middle of the living room, and we just kind of had a makeshift camping night. I threw on a Scott Van Pelt show because I knew my kid wouldn't try to watch that, and she fell asleep instantly. And but I stayed up pretty late into the night because I'm one of those worried, vigilant types that just is like, I need to be awake in case in case action has to happen, like immediately. Like if I have to get everybody up and get them into an interior closet or whatever, I need to be awake. So
right.
So that honestly, that was my role.
My biggest problem, and longtime listeners will know my cat, who has occasionally spoken up on the podcast. Mm-hmm. He's an indoor outdoor cat, and he did not like being kept inside. And I tried to tell him that it was a hurricane, mm-hmm. but he didn't care.
Yeah,
so that was the biggest issue.
That's the thing about cats; they don't care. They do their thing, and we had ours were acting okay. They were a little concerned with some of the whenever you mess with the environment, their habitat, they kind of have a curiosity about what's going on. They get a little freaked out a little bit, but throwing the mattress down in the middle of the living room was a big source of curiosity for them. But it went pretty good. I will say, we have at the mainland, we have a lot of our writers, our staff writers are either without power or without water or without internet, or in one case, all three. So we're definitely, pulling for them. Also, some without cell service. So mm-hmm. we're pulling for them to get back to normal. And we at the mainland are trying to maintain as normal a schedule as we can. There may not be as many feature stories as there usually are, as guys come up in the rotation that are, not able to submit stories or do any internet research or whatever. And then some of us will try to pick up the slack, or we'll try to trade things as we can. But obviously it's a kind of a shell game right right now. So we're trying to make sure everybody has a chance to get up and running. I said I was lucky because I didn't lose power or any of that stuff. But in some ways, you know, now I'm doing like three times as much as I normally do, trying to make up for some of the differences and find trade partners for people that are not sure when they're getting their power back and that kind of thing. But I want to let everybody know that our staff is all okay. Everybody made it through the storm just fine. Even Sean, who was in Melbourne, which got, you know, a lot of storm surge and a lot of you know, they had tornadoes in that area and a lot of wind damage. But Sean actually has power, and I think he's one of the ones that doesn't have internet, but he's got power. So, you know, we hopefully everybody will be up and running soon, but everybody involved with our site and this podcast, everybody's okay. And that's the most important thing. So, you know, we're happy about that. We made it through Irma, and here we are for episode 103. And I guess the best part, Dave, is we get to talk about a victory for our Lions.
And how many people weren't paying attention because they were worried about the hurricane coming? That's the funny part. But yes, we get to talk about a win, and I actually got to watch it, which was also fantastic because, you know, you weren't sure what was going to be going on as far as, you know, when things were going to hit and all that. And so, you know, having internet, having TV and being able to watch a win, well, that was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, we were getting a lot of rain even Saturday night in preparation ahead of the storm. We were getting quite a bit of rain here. So, yeah, I was constantly concerned that my feed was going to go out for DirecTV, and it actually – there were a few glitches, but for the most part, it stayed strong, and I got to watch the game, which was great. So Orlando City goes out to D.C. to play United, a team that had won three games in a row and had allowed zero goals in any of them and had only allowed one goal in five games. So you figure a team that can't score goals is going to have trouble against a team that's in really good defensive form. And lo and behold, before you know what's going on, Kyle Larin's got a goal about 19 minutes in.
Yeah, that was, and I believe it was one, let me look at the name, Dom Dwyer, that got the assist on that. Which made it all the better, although, you know, we all want Dom to open his account here really soon, but he did at least get the assist, and you felt way better after that goal went in, after that first goal, because you know, lately it seems like the goals aren't coming no matter what we do, and it wasn't hit right at the keeper, it didn't hit the woodwork. You know, none of the things that we're used to over the last 2 months happened, and the ball simply was crossed in beautifully and put in by, you know, one of our top scorers, and that's exactly how that's supposed to work.
Yeah, it's good to see Kyle get back on the score sheet. Dom did a good job of getting forward. It was a weird ball. It was kind of a long ball forward that skipped backward off the head of a DC player and just, you know, bounced right to Dom. And Dom just had to take it up the left side, had a defender to deal with, couldn't round him, but he could get enough space to cross that ball in. And just basically Kyle did what he does, and he ran right onto the cross and just got a touch on it just enough to put it inside the back post and left Bill Hamid no chance. And you know, that started things off. You thought, well, that's at least a better start than what we were used to in recent games. And then before you knew it, it was 2-0 as Giles Barnes got the nice bounce. Scott Sutter got forward, got across into the box. It took a deflection, went off a defender, and bounced perfectly right to Giles Barnes, who just put it into the net. And that is two of his three goals this year are against Bill Hamid. So Giles Barnes made it 2-0.
Yeah, and you know, of course, the interesting thing was Giles starting in, at the 10 spot in place of Kaká, which is a, you know, bit of a story on its own. But Giles played an excellent match. He had a lot of key passes. He was all over the place, including you know, getting that goal. So. It was nice to see. Gosh, it was just nice to see offense between, you know, he and Laren and Dom and Yoshi. So I mean, there was just it definitely felt different than what we've been used to recently.
Yeah, Yoshimaru Yatun deserves a heck of a mention here for especially his first half performance. Was very dangerous, not only in passing the ball. He had a shot that went just over. He had a couple of set pieces that really, I mean, it could have been 2-0 in the first 5 minutes. He put he put one right on Tommy Redding that he could have finished, and he put one right just about, I think, an inch off of where Seb Hynes could put it in with his head. So, I mean, he had two really kick, you know, killer crosses early in the game, and he was a factor. Again, a lot of touches. The guy had I'm not even sure if he had a full training session coming back from international duty from Peru. He's had a really solid game. Now, it went 2-0 to the break, Dave, and then they came out. DC had a little bit different plan. They were very aggressive in applying pressure. They took away options, and it seemed like Orlando got pinned in again, like we've seen happen this year. We've seen them at times have trouble clearing their lines accurately. They just kind of play kickball and then send it anywhere, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're defending for a full half an hour because you're not connecting passes and keeping any possession. And it got worse when Christian Aguita got hurt and had to come off. Servando Carrasco came in for him. That was another storyline. Carrasco, it throughout the second half, he gets a yellow card for time wasting when I'm not really sure he really was the waster of the time. He just basically deferred a free kick, and it was him getting the yellow card. You know, he gets the second yellow card and much, you know, much deserved for, you know, very, very harsh challenge coming in. And got the second yellow and got sent off. And that really made things difficult for the Lions at that point.
Well, it did indeed. And then, you know, the second card was well-deserved. That was not a good foul. I mean, we've talked about, defensive midfielders and what's a good foul and what's not a good foul. And that was not a good foul. I agree that, you know, maybe the first yellow was that one kind of surprised me a little bit, but regardless, you know, he goes off. We're playing with 10, and, you know, protecting a one goal lead, which, you know, generally speaking, has not been a forte of the team recently. So certainly was getting a little bit more worried at that point, especially, like you say, because they hadn't had much possession in that second half. DC obviously had some nice halftime adjustments made, and it was definitely making a difference. So fortunately, you know, it didn't bite us then,
but wait, there's more.
There's more.
As they say on the commercials, the infomercials, but wait, there's more. So gets late in the game. DC, it just seems like, is a matter of time before they score. And the next thing you know, Orlando City is two men down, Dave. Seb Hynes gets sent off. He's basically mauled by Lloyd Sam and pushes him off of him and gets the red card, and Sam gets the yellow card. Again, one of those decisions you could really only have if you're Orlando City. You could really not have – that's not ever happening to Atlanta. They're not having a guy, you know, be held and just trying to push the guy off you because no call is being made, and then – you know, that person gets the red card. It's not happened to your New York cities. It's not happened to your Torontos. It's the only kind of thing that happens to Orlando.
Yeah. And, you know, poor Seb, because like you say, I mean, he's trying to get the guy off of him, and to get the straight red like that, I was, my jaw dropped. You know, I had guests over watching the game with me, and my eyes were probably as big as saucers. I couldn't, you know, I understood there being a, you know, foul, and I would have, you know, if they'd gone yellow both ways, it would have made plenty of sense to me. But the straight red, you know, that was, I was blown away. And of course, you know, then you're doing the math in your head and you're like, okay, we're down to 9 now. And worse, the ref didn't seem to want to end the game.
Yeah, I mean, it became a 2-1 game with a ball into Opare, who, you know, he's probably not going to be forward very much if it's 11v11. He gets forward there. Giles Barnes did what he could, but couldn't. It didn't quite make the defensive stop. And you know, Giles would be the first to say he should have been able to knock Opare off the ball. He should have done more, got inside him, whatever. I think Giles did make a number of good defensive plays on the night, but he was not able to make that one. Opare slots home, makes it 2-1, and now it's white knuckle time for whatever's left of regulation and stoppage time, and you know, because he scores in the 89th minute, and you know, and they put up a six minutes of stoppage time, and then it's seven, and then it's eight, and then it's nine, and you're thinking, when the hell is enough enough for, you know, when is enough going to be enough for you? And eventually, after like 32 more set pieces, eventually he did blow the whistle and said, okay, all right, this is even getting too much for me now. I've got to end this game after 732 minutes of stoppage. But Orlando City, you know, for being down two men and having to withstand, what, 10, 11 minutes of stoppage time?
God.
They, to their credit, the Lions got it done. And this is not a – it's not a confident team. It's a fragile team. It's not a team that has, you know, had to protect many leads. And when they have had them, they have not protected them in the last couple of months. And, you know, good to them for, you know, good on them for being able to do that.
Yeah, especially, you know, when you consider the pieces that are missing on the defense. So, you know, to be able to get that win and defend that lead. Yeah, it was, you know, You're sweating bullets watching that game at the end there and yelling at the – I know I was yelling at the ref to be like, you know, seriously? Come on. I mean, you know, like I'm looking at my watch, ref. What are you looking at? He did his darn best to give them every chance to steal back a point. And fortunately, they were unable to. But, yeah, it was you know – right now, any win is an impressive win after, you know, not having one for so long. So, and I think that they, especially in the first half, they did a lot of things as a team really well, and finally looked a little bit more dangerous in the attack, which is something that we've been hoping to see. So, definitely some good things to take away from that game, and hopefully, you know, figure out something that they can use going forward.
Yeah, it was from the seventh minute of stoppage on, I was just – every clearance, I was like, blow the whistle. Right. Every – you know, another clearance, blow the whistle. It's a corner kick. Corner kick's cleared, blow the whistle. And he just kept going and going. It was like – it really was ridiculous. I mean, we watched that Vancouver game a couple weeks ago, and Vancouver wasted time in extreme amounts.
Yep.
And, you know, he wasn't – that ref wasn't booking people. He wasn't adding time on. I think he added like 30 seconds for all of the time wasting in stoppage. I think he really didn't add much at all. And no. And then you have this guy who added in like basically another 5 minutes on top of an already 6 minutes of stoppage. So it just goes to show you that it was a complete full game effort from the Lions. And this is the kind of thing, Dave, that I point to when I get commenters or people on Twitter saying that the team has, you know, that Jason Kreis has lost the locker room. They've quit on him. I point to this kind of a performance and I say they're not quitting on this coach, because a team that would hold on to that lead, given all the adversity that, you know, that the team was undergoing, that's not a team that's quit on its coach. That's not a team that's had enough and doesn't care. This team, they played – listen, we didn't sugarcoat it. They played terribly at New England. They definitely looked disinterested. But if you go back the two games before that against Vancouver and Columbus, they did look like they were putting an effort. They did look like they gave a crap. They did care. Mm-hmm. And they were playing for each other and for their coach. So, you know, Jason Kreis has not lost this team. And I think considering their record, that says a lot about him as a coach, in my opinion.
Absolutely. The whole hashtag Kreis out thing just is upsetting to me. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, we've talked about, you know, last week we talked about, you know, how long he should get just from a, you know, building a team point of view. But mm-hmm. the idea that, like you say, the idea that the players aren't playing for him or for each other is ludicrous. You can see the energy, especially with even some of the new guys. I mean, you know, Dom, obviously his heart is purple. And Yoshi has been, you know, a real revelation. So, and then, you know, even guys who have been there for a long time, you know, Higuita has been playing, you know, until he got hurt, he's been playing some of the best soccer that he has in the last couple games. And so, yeah, I don't see where they're not trying. New England game aside, they
and
they,
every team has flat games like that. Every single team has flat games like that. All you gotta do is go back to this past weekend and look how Dallas played in Atlanta. Just really got blown off the pitch, and it was a 3-0 game that could have been 5 or 6-0. So this is definitely a team that has respect still for its coach, that is still interested in what he's got to say and is still willing to put forth the effort. There's just been it's just a little off, Dave. It's just a little bit off. And whether that is just a few more personnel changes that need to be made, or just a little bit more sharpness, I don't know what it is. And clearly the team is still trying to find that magic formula, but you know, I've said this all along. You're going to give this coach another transfer window, and you're going to give him into next season. And if we get to next year's All-Star break and the team isn't vastly improved, then I think you could start talking about, well, a coaching change needs to be made. Then I think it will be a fair thing to discuss. I don't think it's something that you I just think it's way too much impatience to start discussing a coaching change now, because you're resetting. If every time you hit the reset button, you're starting from scratch every single time. And some people may be better off starting from scratch than others, you know. But, you know, even if like, let's say they traded some draft picks and threw a whole bunch of money at Atlanta and brought Tata Martinez over here, even he would probably not have results right away.
Right.
So as well as he's done in Atlanta. And then the same thing with Patrick Vieira or any of these guys. And I'm hearing people wanting Louis Van Gaal to come in here. And I'm thinking, why is Orlando scoring too many goals for you people? You need Louis Van Gaal to come in here and put a stop to that? I don't get it. I just don't get that. I am on the patience bandwagon until, like I said, next All-Star game. If things are still not good by next summer, then I think you got to make the move. But I don't think you make it at this point. I think you're – when you hire someone and they say it's going to take X amount of time to fix this, you've got to give them at least close to that X amount of time.
Yeah.
And if you don't, why did you hire them to begin with? They told you how long it was going to take. And it goes back to Adrian Heath. He said it's going to take 3 years. In a year and a half, they said, you're done. So you didn't give him his 3 years. He told you right up front it's going to take 3 years. To me, that's just crazy. It's I get why people are impatient. I get that sometimes it's a PR move, but it's you're putting a Band-Aid on things. I just don't think it's a short-term view. It's not a long-term view. And you have to get through those growing pains and get on with things. But stability is important for any sports organization.
Well, of course, and like you said, I mean it's just a little bit off. It's not, you know, this is not a completely and totally broken, you know, system or team or anything. I mean, you know, whether it's additional pieces. I think that's one thing that Jason Kreis has done a good job in, is getting pieces in that are helping. I've more often than not, his the people he brings in are hits, not misses. Mm-hmm. But it's just that little bit off. And I was wondering, can we use a little bit of either GAM or TAM to pay the woodwork for a little bit better, so it plays better for us? Because right now it's not doing a good job for us.
Yeah, there have been far fewer goals in off the post and saves against Orlando City opponents than there have been the other way around. It's Orlando does seem to hit the woodwork a lot, but I think that's just that little bit extra sharpness that the team mm-hmm. needs. But anyway, it's a win. It keeps the team out of last place in the East, and it really kind of until Sunday's results came in, it almost made you think, wow, this is actually not completely out of hand still, because had Atlanta lost to Dallas, it would have been basically a huge game Saturday. Not that it's not a huge game Saturday anyway against Atlanta, but it would have been even bigger, because then you're going, wow, you look at the points and they're not really that far apart. And now they're five 5 points apart. But had they lost that game, it's 2 points difference and they could jump over them. So it's, you know, Montreal lost, which kept New England a point ahead, but you kind of need Montreal to lose in that situation. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, because you look at it this way, Orlando City doesn't play Montreal again, but they do play New England. They do play Atlanta. there's still quite a bit that Orlando City could control if it can start, you know, putting together a few wins. Now, again, that's not something that we've seen them capable of doing. But now that they got one, who's to say? I mean, stranger things have happened, Dave. Stranger things have happened. So I'm not saying this team is making the playoffs, but I am saying that I still believe that there's a chance. And even if it's a small chance, and even if you're going to get the Dumb and Dumber reference out, I still think...
Well, now I can't.
I think it's... See, I've always thought of it this way. People are like, oh, it's a 1% chance or 5% chance. There's very little chance because 538 says so, or MLS metrics say so. But I grew up watching and playing baseball, and I look at it and I go, yeah, we're two games out with seven games to play. This is doable. That's the way I see it, you know?
No, I agree with you, and that's I look at the standings, and I look at that, you know, total points, or like you said, two games out, you know, a couple points out, whatever. I look at it exactly the same way. So, well, I guess I can't do the Dumb and Dumber reference now that you brought it up. No,
well,
but
that was all part of my master plan.
You did have a master plan there.
I am devious that way. So, good. Lions win. We're happy. And nobody got their Papa John's because Papa John's was closed on Sunday because of the storm.
You know what? I never get the Papa John's. For some reason, the Tallahassee Papa John's, they don't want to honor it.
No, they don't. They don't want to honor that stuff. I wonder if you can get the Atlanta United discount up in your way or if that's too far
from
Atlanta.
Nah, I'm about equidistance between the two.
All right. So, Dave, OCB went into Thursday's doubleheader against the Richmond Kickers.
You forgot something.
Yeah, you're right. We got to do a man of the match, don't we?
Yes, we do.
All right. So since you reminded me, you obviously have somebody you're just dying to name. So go ahead and give me your man of the match for DC United.
Well, it was close originally between Giles and Yoshi, but I'm going to have to give the nod to Yoshi just because of, well, obviously his play and then that wicked shot from distance in the 34th. And, you know, he played exceptional, especially for somebody who is, like you said, hasn't had a bunch of training time, hasn't been with the team that long, and he's making a big difference all over the field. So, and especially in that game. So, for me, Yotun gets man of the match.
Yeah, I thought Giles Barnes was very good in that game. I thought that Dom was very good in that game. And here's the thing that I've been telling people all year is that you haven't seen a healthy Seb Hines. I thought Seb Hines played quite well on Saturday at DC United. Of course, he did get sent off, and people are going to point to that and say he shouldn't have done what he did. And the reason that Seb Hines stayed on the field so long is because he wanted the video assistant referee to look at that and say it was a mistake and he shouldn't have been sent off.
Right.
He did not think that he was really sent off in that moment because it was ludicrous. And yet he did get the red card. He got sent off. So a lot of people are going to, you know, point to that. The Seb haters are implacable. You know, you're not going to change their minds, but I thought he played a very good game. I thought that if you had Leo Pereira in there, the way he had been playing, I think the outcome is very different. So if you look at it from that perspective, a pretty good game by him. I thought Tommy played a very improved game over what we've seen the last couple games from him. And I can tell you this, that Tommy does like to play with Seb because Seb communicates well with him. Seb is one of the players that has worked with Tommy and done extra work and taken him under his wing and tried to you know, mentor him a bit. And as some of the veteran center backs that this team has had over the last 3 years have not done. So I know that that Tommy likes to play with Seb, and I think the partnership was a pretty good one. And it's unfortunate that stupid red card is going to keep that from happening this week. Although we might be getting Specs back because he was on the bench on Saturday, so we'll see. But yeah, I think this has all been a very long way of saying yes, I agree with you that Yoshimar Yotun was my man of the match. I thought that he was very, very good early on. I think he was the best player on the pitch for either team for about the first half hour. And I think that he did show some fatigue down the stretch from his busy international week and international travel and all that. So he did fade from the game a bit, but I thought that he was certainly deserving of man of the match honors. So there you go. So now, Dave, can we pivot to OCB?
Yes, now we can pivot to OCB.
So I don't want to even talk about this match much because it was just ridiculous. But OCB against the Richmond Kickers going for 13 straight at home. And you think lowly Richmond Kickers haven't got many wins. It's at OCB. This should work out for 13 straight. And no, OCB lost 2-0 and really didn't do much of anything. Anthony Pulis said it was maybe the worst the team's played in 2 years. Haji Berry had some chances in the first half and didn't put them away. And there was obviously no Pierre Da Silva. He was suspended for the game for, by the disciplinary committee for the USL decided that his yellow card the previous game was worse than a yellow card. So he was out, and it just wasn't a good match for the Young Lions, who basically played in front of no one. I showed up at the stadium to cover the Pride match, the second half of the doubleheader, and I was just shocked at how there was just nobody in the seats. And you know, it's not that they draw well typically, but I think because of the hurricane coming and people wanting to make preparations for that and all the things that people had to do and the fact that it was moved to a 4:30 start on a weekday, many people still had to work. It really was no atmosphere at all, and that had to help the visitors some.
Well, and that's something that's – there was a hurricane coming.
Yeah.
You know, it's not surprising. You know, the earlier start time, a hurricane – there were a lot of things that were going against there being anybody in the stands there. Of course, I'm sure that did help the visitors. Of course, Earl Edwards Jr. also was not between the sticks for OCB as he was up backing up Joe Bendick. I'm sure that doesn't help. Jake Finlayson doesn't have quite the quality of Earl Edwards Jr. So there were a lot of things that were going against it. But like you said, you still were thinking, hey, you know, the way they've been playing, this and Richmond is, you know, not top of the table by any means. So, you know, perhaps this was going to be 13, but I certainly don't believe in it. But 13 was not lucky. And even more so, I think that it was just a whole bunch of things coming together, with Pierre Silva out, Earl out, or with the MLS squad, that just kind of went against OCB. The thing that I also don't believe this, but OCB loses and Orlando City wins. And during the 12-game streak, Orlando City didn't win. So it's I hope it's not some sort of weird cosmic, a Freaky Friday thing where if Orlando City wins, then OCB can't and vice versa, because that would be really, really bad.
Well, here's something for the conspiracy theorists. OCB communications dude Lucas Casas traveled with the MLS team this weekend.
Wait a minute. Didn't somebody on this podcast, not me, say that that's what should happen?
Lucas is the magic man. He's with OCB, and they go on a big, long winning streak. He goes to D.C. with the MLS squad, and they win. So good job. I think it's all Lucas. I think it's the Lucas factor. So OCB's streak is over. Definitely going to need to turn some things around here in the next few games. Pierre back will help. It was certainly a case of OCB not being good in the final third against Richmond. And, certainly a guy like Pierre Da Silva helps with that kind of quality, helps with the service, gets some shots of his own, helps with the set pieces. So he makes other players better, and that's what you need. And they didn't have that little extra bit. They gave up a goal on a free kick. Not a great performance. Anthony Pulis is not happy, but the Young Lions, they'll bounce back. They'll be okay. The Pride closed the doubleheader against the Seattle Reign, and man, for the top two scoring teams, Dave, in the entire NWSL, no goals through normal time. They made it to 90 minutes without a single goal between the two teams. Orlando was the more aggressive team, had the better chances, had more chances, more shots on goal. just couldn't seem to find that final bit of quality on a lot of those shots. They had missed the net more often than they normally do. Seattle, for their part, I will give them a lot of credit. That was the I've seen several of their games this year. That's the best defensive performance I've seen from the Rain all year. And even though they gave up 20 shots, they did block about six of those shots. So they were able to get into some lanes. They were able to get in front of some shooters. You know, there was a little bit of a lack sometimes of some quality or some I won't say communication, but I will say reading the game. There was an instance where Chi Abogugu, in fact, it was the last thing she did before she was subbed out, had an opportunity to play Alex Morgan in and decided instead she would take the ball around the left side herself, and her cross was cut out for a corner kick. But had she just been a little bit more alert and slotted her pass in, she could have sent Alex in all alone 1v1 on the keeper, which I like the odds there. But it didn't happen. She gets subbed out, and Jasmine Spencer returned from her injury. She got on the field. In extra time, I should say, stoppage time, they come out, and there's a loose ball midfield. Pride win it. Danny Weatherholt with a fantastic ball to set Alex Morgan in the 92nd minute, and she scores back post. Perfect placed shot, and you're thinking, the Pride are in the playoffs. This is awesome. Unfortunately, no, because 30 seconds after the restart, there's a free cross from the right side, and Jess Fishlock got her head on it and put it in the net. And in the 94th minute, the Rain get the equalizing goal and keep the Pride from clinching. And that could be big, Dave, because Orlando has a home date with Portland, the second-place team in the league, on a day when the Brazilians and Australians are going to be awfully tired from flying back from Oz. And then they have to go to first-place North Carolina. Now, the only good thing about that is there's some potential there for North Carolina to rest some players if they've locked up that they've already locked up a home field match in the first game. So there's some potential for maybe North Carolina and also Portland, which clinched second place at least. There's a chance for one of those two teams to maybe not play their best lineup and give some players some rest. So a very difficult road ahead for the Pride with two games left to get one more point to sneak into the playoffs. I think two will clinch it for sure. I think one would, unless they get blown out and Seattle blows out their opponents to somehow overcome the goal differential. But I think basically one more point would do it for the Pride. And it's a tougher road now. Although Sky Blue lost to Spirit, so Sky Blue is eliminated. So Seattle is literally the only other team that can jump into that top four that's currently not out. And, of course, the Chicago Red Stars and the Pride will be battling for that third spot.
You know, it was an incredibly frustrating game because it, you know, like I said, 20 shots. I mean, you're thinking certainly the way that this team has been playing, something's going to go in, and it doesn't, and it doesn't, and it doesn't. And then finally, Alex gets the goal in stoppage, and you had all of 30 seconds to celebrate before it all came crashing back down. I think I'd watched the goal. I'd celebrated. I'd got up. I went into the kitchen, which is right next to my living room, and I can still see the TV. I went in there to get something, and as I turned around, they scored that goal, and I was just I couldn't believe it. I was just, you know, I went back, sat down. I was like, oh, well, that sucked.
I can't believe you got up either, Dave, because it's your fault, clearly, that that happened.
Yes, obviously my fault. I will take the blame on that. Send your hate mail to Dave at the mainland. So tougher road. I still feel pretty good about their chances to get that point. You know, even going up against the teams you're going against, I mean, right now they're playing just as good as anybody else in the league. And, you know, it would surprise me more than not if they weren't able to grab a point someplace. So I've been on the Pride bandwagon for, you know, quite a while, and I'm not jumping off now. I still think that they get it done.
Yeah, now Seattle has a home game against FC Kansas City. That shouldn't be a big problem for them. So that's one of their remaining games, and it's a much easier, I would say, an easier road for Seattle than Orlando. But Seattle has to get max points, and Orlando can basically just get one more point and be fine. So a draw anywhere along the line in these last two games will do it, or a Seattle non-win. So if maybe we can get some help, won't even need to win either of those games. But it would certainly be nice to just get it over with, get the first win ever against the Portland Thorns in Pride history. They've done a lot of other firsts this year. So, you know, a first win over the Thorns would be great. And how great would it be in case you have to play the Thorns in the first round if you've, you know, come in with some confidence because you've just beaten them?
Oh, absolutely. And all the lessons that you would take from, you know, that match and what worked, what didn't. You know, there's only so much, you know, changes that any team can make at this point in the season. So, you know, if you can get that figured out, get that win, then that, you know, the confidence alone, you know, going into a playoff game is going to be huge, let alone, like I said, whatever tactically you learn.
Mm-hmm. And it's pretty sure that the Pride is going to have to earn a point somewhere because, you know, like I said, Seattle hosts FC Kansas City. That's a long trip. FC Kansas City, not much left for them to play for. And also the last game for Seattle at Washington. So Washington is, I think they have maybe four players left from the starting line. But at least as long as one of them is Mallory Pugh, there's a chance there, Dave, for the upset. But I wouldn't expect Seattle to drop any points. So really, it's the pressure is all on the Pride and on Tom Sormani. He was not happy with the finishing on Thursday night. He wasn't happy with the you know, the lack of quality in the final third. He thinks maybe the pressure got a little bit to them. He did say it felt like a playoff game. I think that bared out, that was borne out in the score. The fact that neither team could score for 92 minutes, I think it made it look like, you know, there was a lot of intensity to it. Kudos to Seattle. Every time Marta got the ball, there were three or four players around her, forcing her back. So they really did a good job of choking off service from her. And she still made a number of mind-boggling plays in that game where she would somehow come out of a pack of four players, or she would put just the right amount of touch and spin on a ball to curve it and switch it and send somebody up the flank. She's really been a treat to watch this year. And hopefully they'll, like I said, go out, take care of business at home against Portland on September 23, I believe that one is. So, and I think that's a lifetime game of the week. So that's, I mean, they don't get any bigger than that. If Orlando Pride can get one more draw out of this season. And by the way, they're on a 6-game unbeaten streak.
That they are. And so at least one streak continues. The performance by Marta, despite, like you said, you know, maybe not, you know, having as many, you know, as much service, you know, put in for the offense, it's still, she still was on a just individual level when you look at some of the things she did and her ball control. And it is amazing to watch her, and you can see why she's won, you know, World Player of the Year so many times. If you haven't been watching, good grief, how many times do we have to tell you to go watch? But holy cow, some of the things she does with the ball at her feet are absolutely astounding. And like you said, it is a real pleasure to watch her play soccer for the Pride.
So Alex Morgan, another goal. I believe that's 9 goals, 3 assists since her return for the U.S. Women's National Team star. And congrats to Danny Weatherholt on her first professional assist on that play. So a 1-1 draw. It was probably a deserved outcome. I thought Seattle played extremely well. They had a really good game plan. And again, the Pride were just a little bit lacking sharpness with the final shot or the final product a few times. But and of course, you know, Camilla having to play right back because there weren't any other right backs available definitely didn't help with the offensive quality. So good job by Tom Sormani's crew to go out there and get a decent result. The teams drew both their games this year by 1-1 scores, both in Seattle and here in Orlando. And so I guess they're about as evenly matched as you can get. The team has broken up for the international break. We'll talk a little bit about the U.S. women's national team and some of the Pride players, where they're playing in a little bit. Of course, that game, the Pride versus Rain, was moved, Dave, to Thursday because of the storm coming in, and they wanted to make sure the game could get played and the teams could get out and all the players could get where they needed to go long before the storm came. A little bit of nervousness on the part of some of the Seattle players on Wednesday night, saying that they were a little bit afraid to be in Orlando and were worried and they didn't feel safe, and the NWSL should just postpone the game. And I felt like that was a little weird because, maybe it's just because I've been in Florida since 1999, but it was just like, you're not in any more danger, tomorrow than you were 2 weeks ago here. It's not a big deal. You have plenty of time to get out of here. But they were tweeting about it, and it was strange to me, but eventually, they didn't look very scared during the game.
No, and, part of, one of those players that was tweeting that was, of course, Rapinoe. And, we're talking about a longtime pro there. Conspiracy theory, Dave says, maybe she was trying to get that game pushed to when we wouldn't have the Australians or the Brazilians there and they could get an easy win.
Yeah, that's definitely, that would cross my mind, a little bit of gamesmanship. Of course, the first person that tweeted out not feeling safe was the player that tied the game in the 94th minute. So maybe you should have been a little bit more afraid, Jess Fishlock. I'm just saying. maybe if the thunder had hit, like, right before that cross came in, maybe if there was, a big, loud thunder boom, maybe that wouldn't have happened, and then the Pride would have clinched. But it is what it is. It's funny, we're talking to Allie Krieger after the game, and she said that cross, she felt it hit her bun, her hair. She said if she hadn't cut her hair, maybe that goal wouldn't have happened. if she had a little bit bigger bun, it might have been enough to just throw that cross off, because it was inch perfect cross. She said it brushed her bun, and she felt it, but she couldn't prevent that from reaching Jess Fishlock, unfortunately. So anyway,
I'm not taking the blame anymore. Then we're blaming her hairdresser now.
All right. So anyway, we'll get into the specifics of some of the hurricane stuff that happened with our special guest this week from Orlando City Soccer Club. We'll get to that special guest right after this.
All right, joining us this week on the Mainland Podcast, very happy to have with us Jackie Ramos from the Orlando City SC Communications Department. Jackie, how are you?
I'm doing really good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, we really, really appreciate you being on the show in such an odd week for everybody. First of all, let me ask you, how did you get through Hurricane Irma? Where were you? How did you do? And how did your place survive?
Yeah. So I live in downtown Orlando, and I was in my apartment. I just felt like it was the safest place out of anybody that I knew. I had a couple of friends with me and was just really watching outside of my windows and kind of looking at how the storm was coming through. But I have to say, I think I'm one of the only few people that did not lose power during Irma in Orlando. So I am very happy about that. I've just been kind of playing host to different family members and cousins of mine that live in town. But I am from Naples, Marco Island area, so I'm more concerned about my family down south. I just got an update that schools are closed through September 18th down there. So mainly I've just been paying attention to them and keeping people that evacuated up to date on things that I've been hearing. So I have to say I had a fairly decent experience through this.
Good. I definitely wanted – I'm glad you're okay. I'm glad everything went well. I wanted to have you on this week to kind of get your take on, with this thing approaching. I'm sure you guys had discussions on what was going to happen with the MLS team was out of town and you had no way to get them back, so there had to be arrangements made there. And I wanted to get a sense of what you guys did as a club to prepare for this in terms of, making sure that the Pride and OCB players were all accounted for and that all the proper arrangements were made, and how you kept in touch with everything.
Yeah. First of all, I have to say that the city of Orlando and just the police department and all of those communication folks did such a good job over communicating before and after the hurricane came through with everyone. They actually have a group chat, like email chat, with all of the different PR people for, you know, Disney, SeaWorld, the city of Orlando, and they were constantly communicating updates. And that was really helpful because we were able to relay that to our soccer department and kind of help them get prepared for this. So, I mean, leading into the weekend, we were already making different arrangements to the training schedules and making sure that Orlando City, specifically since they were leaving town, that they were able to have a day off to, you know, prepare their families and all of those different things. So, first city specifically, since they were heading to D.C., a lot of them flew their families up with them. A lot of them had their families in D.C. I think only 7 Pride players stayed in town. And for OCB, it was kind of half and half. But we were just constantly communicating back and forth with them and kind of giving them the time that they needed to prepare. And just doing the same thing across the front office.
So, obviously, the challenges of this week were different than the usual ones. Your title, I believe, is Senior Director of Communications. And can you tell our listeners what exactly you do?
Absolutely. If I were to do a little elevator speech on exactly what I do, I am the middle person between the general public and our organization. So basically, anyone that wants to speak or interview or get a hold of any of our players, senior staff, or majority owner, they have to come through our team, and we will help coordinate. We also help our team internally deliver any messages that they want to say. So if there's any major announcements, if there's any player transactions, my team handles all of that. We also manage the team's training schedules from a communications perspective. So we're the ones that coordinate when we're going to do availabilities every single day, what players are available, and just kind of manage all of that both internally and then externally as well. So even like, for example, our internal broadcast departments or anything like that, they have to kind of work through us to just help. And really, we do that because it can be a lot of people for the players, and it kind of helps them understand that they have one or two go-to people that are going to come at them with requests. So a lot of it is time management and people management, and obviously coordinating announcements the right way.
Jackie, I know we're recording.
That was more than an elevator speech, but I hope that was good.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes you're on the elevator a long time. So, you know. Jackie, the I think we're recording this on Tuesday night. I think a lot of people would like to know, although you may not have all of the data and all of the assessments done, how the facilities stood up, not only the stadium, but the club offices, the practice facilities, and all of that.
Yeah, so since I live downtown, I actually was able to sneak out and go check out the stadium, even though it was on curfew. But the stadium had a little bit of structural damage. Honestly, nothing major, which is fantastic news for us. Just a lot of, like, maybe banners blown out and little things like that. But the stadium is doing great. The training facility did lose power and did have some structural damage on the outside, mainly just trees down, but it fared pretty well as well. The biggest thing for our front office is that the offices still remain closed because there are too many people without power. So we're actually closed for tomorrow as well, and probably likely looking at opening on Thursday.
Wow. So yeah, challenges indeed. And once you guys get back, about how long do you think it's going to take to, you know, between everybody's personal things, how long is it going to take for everybody to get back up and running and into the swing of things in your office?
I say we give it a whole week for everything to kind of really feel normal. It's a lot of streets that have trees down and people that can't access roadways or are thinking about relatives in other different locations. So I say we give it about another week. I actually went through Hurricane Andrew as well, even though I was probably 4 or 5 years old. And I was in Naples and Miami area for that. And I actually remember not having school for 3 weeks. and having to make up those days in the summer. So I think us here in Orlando with the storm, we're definitely luckier that it didn't hit us as a Category 5 like it did in some of the Caribbean areas. And we're just fortunate that maybe we'll take us a couple of days to get back to normal, but I don't think it'll be a crazy amount of time.
Yeah, I think a lot of us were very lucky here in Central Florida. Jackie, one of the things that I think it was communicated well, but I think there are a lot of fans that maybe were you know, busy preparing for the storm, and they maybe missed the news, or maybe they're just not, you know, online people. They don't maybe do as much reading or research. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that happened was, you know, obviously you guys had to be aware of the fact that your broadcasters are here in Orlando. And so the broadcast on Saturday night of the game at DC United was, you know, people were like, well, where's Jeff Radcliffe? But it was the DC United, DC United folks there. What went into that decision and being able to get TV 27 to pick up the DC feed?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We just made that decision very last minute. It's something we were talking about over the last few days. And then once the reality, we were facing the reality that the hurricane was going to possibly come towards Central Florida, we just decided we don't want any of those guys on the road. We don't want anyone working or taking their focus away from what they should have been doing, which is preparing their homes, preparing to make sure they can, you know, live with a couple of days of no power should that would have happened. So about 24 hours before the game, we just decided, let's just not do this. It was a very easy conversation to have with our team over at TV27. They were very understanding in that fact. So we traveled as few people as we could from the communication side and made sure that those guys and girls were safe.
Now, speaking of traveling, of course, the team I left D.C. and went to Atlanta. You know, how is their schedule, you know, been this week with everything that's going on in preparation for the game Saturday?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy for the team. We were able to get them out of town early enough, which was good, on Friday. And then obviously they had the game. And then the team, we didn't really know what to expect or around what time this hurricane was supposed to come in. So they wanted to try to get as close as possible to Florida in case they can make an easy decision to go home, whether it be via road or book some flights. So once we felt like it was safe for the team to come back, we decided to let them come back in town. And they actually drove into Orlando tonight. I believe they're actually arriving right around now because it's too difficult to try to get a flight for 40 people 24 hours before departing. So it's been a little bit of a crazy day, I think, for the players and just a little bit of a crazy time. Thankfully, a lot of them have their families with them. I think that's helpful. They don't have to be nervous. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people on the team, a lot of guys that are not from Florida. And I think the idea of a hurricane is super scary. I mean, it is scary anyway, but they've never even been through like really horrible thunderstorms, for example. So I think through the whole process, they're just happy to have their families with them.
So they just like bust in from Atlanta then on Tuesday?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So the storm itself, obviously, everybody wrote it out their own way. I know Allie Krieger tweeted out that she spent the night in her closet. She kind of bunkered
yeah,
in.
Yeah, she lost power.
Were there any other storm stories from the team that stuck out to you?
We haven't really been able to like see them in person to ask some of these questions. I'm sure we'll hear some super dramatic stories on how people were dealing with the storms. I'm from Florida, so to me it was. It sounds crazy to say, but it's almost interesting to really witness and be part of something in Mother Nature like that. But I'm sure people outside of the state, this was a pretty crazy experience, and we'll figure all of this out once we get to training.
Well, yeah, and you know, of course, I'm not even a native Floridian, but you know, the joke is that we look at a hurricane, we're like, bring it on, you know. And obviously, it's going to be different for those that that. You know, don't have that experience.
Absolutely. Like I said, most of our Pride players left. We had about seven players stay.
Oh, wow. Okay. So Who on the team do you think was the most prepared for the hurricane?
From the ones that stayed, let me see. I don't know. I would have loved, if I had to hunker down, I would have loved to be with Toni, because I'm pretty sure she had some great snacks. I believe her and Jamia Fields stayed together in their home. So I would put that group as probably the most prepared.
Yeah, and a lot of the younger guys from OCB are probably from the area. So that's a good thing. Jackie, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk to you about something that, I was in a communications department for a major league sports franchise down in South Florida. But one of the things we don't like is when we have to do things that, there's bad news for the club and we have to go do things. Something that you probably didn't expect to do this year was to go to the jail to pick up a couple of players. I just want to get your take on how that was for you and just how you went through that and got through it in terms of doing your job and keeping an eye on the bright side of things.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think to what you said earlier, it's obviously part of my job to figure out and be there and deal with those situations. It's never easy. I think the best thing that we can do, and we have been, is we really over-communicate with each other. We really over-communicate with our leadership group, with our CEO, with our majority owner, and just kind of make sure that everyone that needs to be in the loop is kind of aware of what's going on. In terms of me and obviously being there or picking someone up, which not ideal, obviously, that's just kind of part of the job. Mm-hmm. My job is to represent this organization, and it's also to care for the players. We deal with them every single day of our lives. And to us, it's more than a job. And I think all Orlando City fans can say that. We get so attached to our team. So I just look at the situation and want to make sure that whatever is happening, that we're just able to take care of people and also just provide the right information. We in the organization, we're always honest. We're honest with what we say. We're honest with the information that we deliver. As a PR professional, it's kind of my job. It's my job to just be honest and talk about it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what we do. We don't get sidetracked. We don't look at what people are talking about. We just kind of focus on what we need to get through. And we're helpful both to anyone within our organization and helpful to people that ask us information. So it's never easy, but it's definitely been experiences, I think, for everyone.
Well, we've been kind of doom and gloom because of the hurricane. What is your favorite part of your job? What is it that brings you joy in your job?
I think it's two things, right? First, I love the travel. I do travel with teams, and before I joined Orlando City, I was with NASCAR Communications as well for a couple of years. And I have to say that I have toured the U.S. I've gone to Mexico, I've gone to Canada, all just from different work trips, and it's been such an amazing experience. And then second, I would probably say I love doing entertainment PR and sports PR because I don't need to deal with, I'm not doing heart surgery here, right? I always say that, like, sports is the ultimate form of reality. There's a beginning, there's an end, there's season one, there's season two, there's season three, there's so much going on. And you can have fun while you're going to work, and you can be entertained with the stories that you're telling. It's not just cutthroat, like healthcare, for example. It keeps it interesting. I love the fact that I can come into work one day and think I'm going to have such a super easy day. I'm going to go spend 4 hours at training. I'm going to have lunch and come back into the office for a few hours. And then next thing you know, I'll get an email saying, hey, we're going to announce this new player transaction or this new trade. And next thing you know, it like totally turns your day upside down. But at the end of the day, what I'm talking about is entertaining and entertainment. And then also I love the fact that I can change what I do on a daily basis. I can go from training to dealing with announcing a really cool corporate partnership or working on a different campaign. So it keeps it interesting for me.
Jackie, before we let you go, just want to ask one more question in terms of the preparation for the storm that came through. One of the things you guys had to do was to scramble to put together an OCB Pride doubleheader last Thursday. And I wondered, you know, kind of because we saw some tweets go out from the Seattle Reign players who were obviously not used to hurricanes coming and maybe didn't feel quite safe. Was any of that communicated to you guys? And if so, how did you handle that in assuring everybody that, you know, you had time to safely get the game in and get everybody out of town long before the storm was arriving?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we understand the concerns. It is scary. If someone told me I was going to California when they were expecting an earthquake, I think I'd be pretty scared too. But the players communicating is one thing. And what I hope that they all understand as a whole is that there is such a large group of people that are behind planning their games, that are behind planning what they do, that are behind planning what they eat. These players have a network of people behind them. So while they may think it's crazy that this is being scheduled, I guarantee that there was a big group from NWSL. There was a group from our internal team that were all on calls, that were all updating each other on an hourly basis almost, and that are making decisions that keep the team safe. So it's okay. Everyone is free to express themselves, but they're not alone. It's not just one person making a decision. It's a really informed group of people making the decision.
All right, Jackie Ramos, the Senior Director of Communications for Orlando City SC. Thanks so much for coming on with us and sharing, you know, a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff about what went into the hurricane preparations for the club.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys, and I hope you're staying safe as well.
All right, here we are, Dave, in stoppage time of episode number 103 of the Mainland Podcast. I want to thank Jackie Ramos for coming on the show and telling us all about the hurricane preparations that the club made. That was one of the things that I was a little worried coming into this week. Wasn't sure who would have power, whether or not we'd be able to do a show this week. You know, who else would have power, who would have internet and that kind of thing. And also, you know, who would be available to have on the show, because we're on an incredible run. I don't think a lot of people know this, but we didn't always have guests every week. We had many, many shows without a guest, and we have not missed a single show in 2017 as far as having guests are concerned. We've had a guest for every Mainland Podcast in 2017. I didn't want that streak to come to an end, Dave. And it didn't.
Good job, Michael.
So thanks to Jackie in a very difficult time for staying in touch and filling in and being our guest this week. Dave, we've got some mail. Before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about the international break for the women. The U.S., of course, Alex Morgan and Ashlyn Harris are a part of the U.S. women's national team. For the upcoming friendlies against New Zealand. A couple friendlies. Hopefully they'll get through it. I really like Jill Ellis to not even play them. That'd be kind of good for me because we really would like to have them healthy and 100% and rested coming back to play against the Portland Thorns. So, you know, two Pride players there. Could have been three. Allie Krieger, still on 98 caps with the U.S., was not called up for these two friendlies. And then three Brazilians and two Australians going all the way down under to play two games against each other, as Australia and Brazil have a pair of friendlies down in Oz. So you're looking at Steph Catley and Alana Kennedy, who have been just tremendous this year for the Pride. And, of course, Monica, who has regained a starting center back slot, as well as Camilla, who's been just an unbelievable young player for the Pride, and Marta, who is, you know, that crafty veteran and a world-class player that the team really needed. You know, all of these players going out and playing extra games, you know, it's great to represent your country and stuff, but man, does this window just seems like it really sucks for the NWSL.
Well, and not only that, but it's we're glad that we have these incredible players on the Pride, but with that comes them playing for their countries, and given the quality of these players, like, you know, wishing Jill Ellis to not play Ashlyn Harris and Morgan is kind of that's a little pie in the sky there. I don't think that you're going to get your wish. You know,
yeah, probably not. I think Ashlyn will play one of the two games, and Alyssa Nair will play the other. So maybe
her to play the first one.
Yeah, can we get Ashlyn to play the first game? Jill Ellis generally does the thing that's worse for the Pride whenever she does these things. She either calls them up and doesn't use them so that they could have stayed with the Pride, or she calls them up and like puts them on in the 89th minute or something.
Right.
But the Tournament of Nations, you know, Krieger didn't get in any of the games. You know, Morgan basically wasn't used all that much, as much as she normally is. It was a little bit weird, but it's great to have players that are high enough quality that they're representing their countries and stuff. It just for the NWSL season, as it heads into its final 2 weeks, it's just an international break that just kind of is unfortunate.
Yeah, it throws everything off a little bit. You know, you're sitting here and we're sitting here talking about, you know, what the Pride have to do to secure that playoff spot, and then, you know, we've got a couple of weeks because we've got to, you know, talk about international games, which we're happy to do. We love watching soccer. We'll watch all the games. That's not a problem. It's just you know, anytime a player goes to play for their country, there's always that risk of you know, injury or just being tired or having to fly to Australia and being tired because you've got to fly back from Australia.
It's a long flight.
So it's a long flight. It's almost literally all the way across the world. So yeah, it's that does present challenges. Nothing to do about it. If hopefully they don't get played too much, and especially, you know, given that it's friendlies, and we get them back healthy and rested as much as they can be, so that, you know, we can finish this playoff run.
Can we get Flavio to have a private plane, meet them right after the second game, and fly them directly home?
I would think that he could afford to do that. Now, whether he's going to listen to us, I'm sure he listens to the podcast. So,
oh, sure, everybody does.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, Flavio, if you're listening, if you can make that happen for us, that would be great.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. You know, we'll cover the games here with the podcast and at the mainland, and we'll let you know what everybody's doing. But, you know, it's a crucial time for the Pride, and that game against Portland is very, very big for Orlando. Again, the Pride, the Portland has clinched. I'm not sure how focused they are on maybe winning the Shield. Maybe they'll give some players a rest, you know, the Tobin Heaths and the Lindsay Horans, that kind of thing. Although, you know, both Tobin Heath and Lindsay Horan will be part of this U.S. setup as well. So, you know, they'll come back having just as much or just as little rest as Harris and Morgan. So there's at least that. But, you know, they don't have all the Australians and Brazilians that we do. So so it's definitely an advantage for Portland in that sense. But hopefully nothing major will go wrong, and we'll get everybody back and you know, give them a 5-hour energy right before the game. And not a sponsor, by the way. You know, get the win against Portland and get this thing clinched.
Dave, now, of course, I'm sure Five Hour Energy is listening, and if you are, we would certainly be open to you sponsoring the podcast.
Yeah, please contact us at themainland at gmail.com. By the way, that's also where you can send your mailbag questions, and you can tweet us at themainland is our Twitter, and use the hashtag AskTMLPC. And we've got a few questions, Dave, this week, only a few, and they're all from the same person. So,
Well, to be fair, there was a hurricane. So
there was a hurricane. So very few people still, you know, are back into their full swing. And, you know, many people don't either have internet or electricity or just have bigger problems and as they try to clear their roofs and of debris and their yards of debris and stuff like that. So Hector Manley on Twitter has hit us up with some questions.
First one is, if we lose at Atlanta and our playoff hopes disappear even more, can we expect a lot of OCB or fringe Orlando City players to play the rest of the season? What do you think, David Rowe?
I would, you know, my initial impression on that is not really. We may see a little bit, but I think that Jason would rather take the time and working with those that he's got on the MLS squad and trying to build that towards next year. Even if you want to look at it this way, evaluating who he has and, you know, maybe who he keeps and who he doesn't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not to say that, you know, maybe Earl Edwards Jr. gets to play instead of, you know, Joe Bendick for a game or something like that. Although I have the feeling that Joe would, you know, Joe's going to want to play if Joe's healthy. So, mm-hmm. And given that he's played every minute of every game since he's gotten here, that would almost be an odd substitution. But I think Jason's going to want to, you know, continue to evaluate what he's got, you know, going into the off season. So, you know, my initial impression is, you know, you might see the odd player here or there, but I don't think we'll see a bunch.
Yeah, Hector, my feeling is that we're probably going to see a little bit of, you know, maybe you might see like Redding one game, Pereira another game, as some guys get a look to see if, you know, over just the last few games to see maybe where one is as opposed to the other. Jose Aja might be back in the lineup when he's done with his suspension and that kind of thing. I don't think you're going to see what we'd really all kind of like to see, and that's a start from Pierre da Silva, just to see how he would fare over 90 minutes in an MLS game. You know, some guys are really good at the level below, and they can't quite make the leap right away. Other guys can step right in, and it's like the lower level was holding them back. I mean, you see this all the time in baseball where a guy is, you know, tearing up triple A a little bit, and then he gets called up and he doesn't miss a beat. And it's like, almost like, well, he was playing at triple A level and now he's actually able to, you know, combine with other players and he's still seeing the pitches better, but maybe the ballparks are giving him better visibility and he's even, you know, even better than he was and that kind of thing. So it's hard to say. I would really like to see Pierre get a game. I don't think you'll see him get more than one. I think the more likely candidate is if he's able to get that hamstring healthy is maybe Richie Larea gets a start maybe. But I don't think you're going to see a lot of that. I think we're going to figure out pretty soon what's going to happen with Earl, though. I think we're going to see either Earl maybe go back down and get OCB, you know, make sure OCB gets to the playoffs and see how far they can go. Or you may see him get a game before the end of the season and give Joe a rest. It's kind of hard to say, but, you know, Jason Kreis is a coach that kind of likes to play his veterans, and he's comfortable with his veterans. He kind of doesn't like surprises, and so he kind of goes with the known quantities sometimes, but that is not to say that he never plays young guys. I mean, I was really surprised to see how many times that Larea came in off the bench this year, and it was nice to see, but you know, I guess the long answer that I'm giving you is that I don't know that you're going to see a lot of it, but you might see a little. So that's where I'm at with that. So Hector's next question, Dave, is what will be our biggest focus of need in the offseason? We kind of addressed this before, but let's do it again here.
Yeah. Once again, I'll go back to, you know, what we had answered before, and for me, it's midfield. With the added needing another center back, or deciding that, you know, Tommy is going to be that guy. The additions of Yotun and Powers certainly helps, but I'd really like to see another attacking midfielder, and then once again that goes back to will Kaká be around? Right. So you know, there's a ton of questions surrounding the midfield, hinging on what happens with Kaká. For me it's mainly going to be the midfield, with that one little, you know, potential center back need.
Yeah, that's really the big question is what's going on with Kaká, and that's, I guess my biggest focus is getting Yoshi Otoon's right-footed twin brother on the right side of the diamond. But yeah, a midfielder that's going to make everyone around him better, the way that kind of we've seen a little bit from Yoshi Otoon. We've seen it on other teams, guys like Piatti, guys like Almiron, mm-hmm. And Alessandrini. Out in LA and Lodero up in Seattle, those kinds of guys who are going to make the offense go because they're going to put the ball in the exact right spot where the strikers need them at the exact right time. They can anticipate those runs. They're not delaying and getting their passes cut out, that kind of thing. Those are the kind of midfielders that are now needed to win in this league. And I think that Orlando City got a good one in Yoshi, but I think they need one more. And I think that's going to have to be somebody that takes the place of the Brazilian, really, because I think this is also a league where speed matters. And I don't think you're seeing Kaká get to those balls that he used to get to or clear those defenders he used to clear. So as cagey as he is and as skilled as he is and as good as his soccer IQ is, I don't know that Kaká is the answer moving forward for this team. So I think there's your one big off-season focus. I think you still need some striker depth because I don't think it's quite where we need it to be if we're going to play two strikers. And that second center back, I would really like to see a second veteran back there with Spectre, and that's somebody that can be starting material, and then you can give Spectre a rest and play one of the young guys with him, or you can give the new veteran a rest and play one of the young guys with Spectre. You have some depth. You have some ability to rotate the squad without losing quality. That's kind of what this team needs. So those are the focuses, I think, of the offseason. And I think what you'll see is I think you're going to see the team get a little bit younger going into next season in some key roles and adding some more speed. I think that's what's going to help the team get more width. It's going to help the team deal with those lightning fast counters that the 4-4-2 is susceptible to. And I think that's what we'll see. Hector asks also, Dave, can we expect Will Johnson to be on the team next year? He hopes so. And also, how is his process? I've spent so many years amongst Canadians when I was working in hockey. I just want to say process, but it's process. How is the process going, Dave?
Well, are we going to see him? I think, we talked about this last week. We both agreed that we don't, barring some kind of just absolute exoneration, we don't anticipate Will joining the team, which – with his quality on the field, obviously we will miss that. But it's off the field can change everything in a heartbeat. So as far as what's going on with the process, that I will defer to you. I haven't looked, to be honest. We had, bigger concerns with hurricanes and things like that. And since he wasn't going to be seeing the field, I kind of had, shuttled that over to the side a bit. Obviously, if he remains, he's going to have to go through the league's, what did they call it, the rehab thing. Mm-hmm. But that's depending on if he even ends up staying. So I think we're, unless you know something else, I think we're still kind of a wait and see as far as what's going on with that.
Well, the process, I think, Hector, right now is that the league and the team do their investigation. The league has to put Will through their mandatory program, the substance abuse and behavioral health program that Kyle Larin had to go through. But I don't think this is going to be a quick turnaround like Kyle's. I think this is a much more serious issue, and I think that the league takes this a lot more seriously than a DUI arrest. So I think this is – I would be very surprised if there's any kind of a no contest or guilty verdict. I would be surprised to see Will Johnson ever back in purple again, and I would be absolutely shocked to see him in purple this year. So I don't think we're going to see him this year, and I really don't expect that we'll see him again. Again, I just mentioned that we're probably going to get younger. Will is getting up there a little bit. He's not as old as some of our midfielders, but he's
you know, I think it's fair to say he's lost a step from earlier in his career. And I think that we can get more value in that spot as a starter. Although I thought Will was a pretty good on the field leader. This is the kind of thing that his arrest can undermine that kind of thing. I don't think that there's a lot of tolerance for that kind of thing amongst, you know, people, most people in the locker room that he's going to be sharing that with. So again, unless, like Dave said, he's completely exonerated and it turns out that, you know, that everything was, you know, some of the stuff in the police report was kind of fabricated or overblown. I just don't think we see Will Johnson back next year, but I will say that stranger things have happened. So who knows? I just don't expect it.
No, definitely not. So it's unfortunately, it doesn't look good for Will. And that, of course, you know, the previous question when we asked about, you know, addressing the needs, well, that's one of those midfield needs.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, there's if you're going to play a 4-4-2, you need four pretty dynamic midfielders in today's MLS. And I think we have, I think Christian Aguita can play that six role and do it in a dynamic way. I think there's still a lot of room for him to grow as a player. I don't think he's reached, mm-hmm. reached that ceiling yet. I think he's got a really, really high ceiling. And I just don't think that he's been utilized much this year in the way that suits his skill set. And I think that when you've seen him used in the way that suits his skill set, he's played some of his best soccer of the year. So I think Christian is a young kid that can hold down that defensive midfield in the 4-4-2. I think you're going to have Yoshi on the left side. I think you might have a new player on the right and up top. So, and maybe even Dylan Powers on the right side and then someone new up top. It's kind of remains to be seen. I think we'll see, going back to that second question, I think we'll see a little bit more of Dylan Powers going forward if the team is eliminated, just to see what we have in him. But, yeah, it's – the midfield needs to be more dynamic. It's not good enough. It's the biggest area of concern of the team. I know everybody likes to bag on the back line, but if the back line's not put in jeopardy, they're not leaking goals. So the midfield needs to stop getting overrun and turning the ball over and that kind of thing. So we want midfielders, I think is what we're saying.
And we want them now. Yeah.
So thanks, Hector, for all of those questions. We appreciate that. Hopefully next year, and maybe next week, we'll get a few more people getting their power back on and chipping in some questions for Ask the Mainland podcast. You could do that on Twitter. At the Mainland is our Twitter account, and you can just hit us up with that hashtag AskTMLPC. You can email us themainland@gmail.com and ask your questions. It doesn't have to be about soccer. Can be. Doesn't have to be. Dave, before we get out of here, we got a big game on Saturday.
Yes, we do.
And of course, I mean OCB at St. Louis FC. No, wait, no. OCB at St. Louis is a big game for the Young Lions. Hopefully they'll go out there and get a victory on the road. But Orlando City continues the road trip. Started at New England, went to DC, now Atlanta. This is one of those proverbial 6-point games, Dave. The real opportunity to stay in this race is Saturday. Basically, you get a win Saturday, you have every right to think that you could jump back above that line. You lose it, mm-hmm. and you really probably can't expect enough teams to fall apart and you to get enough points to get back above that line. It's really kind of the make or break game now. And even if they win that game, every game beyond that is another make or break game. So that's the point where you are this late in the season when you're below the line. And although that win at DC was nice, it's not going to be easy this week. We've already talked about Seb Hines getting sent off. Perhaps you get Jonathan Spector back, so maybe you're not hurting there. Christian Aguita, though, got hurt. We don't know the status yet of whether or not he'll be available. I think anytime a player gets hurt and has to leave the pitch, you can probably assume they're not going to play in the next game unless there's some kind of miraculous recovery. You know, a contusion, something like that, you can shake off after a few days. But, you know, sprains and strains are very, very hard to come back from in just a week, especially a week where you're not able to come home for a few days because of a hurricane. And so you may not have Aguita. You're not going to have Hines. You're not going to have Kaká because he got yellow card accumulation now after he got booked late in that game. Still don't have Jose Aja, who had a yellow card accumulation and red card suspension, so a two-game suspension for him. This will be the second game of that. Of course, Will Johnson still suspended by the league. Dave, not a lot of bodies. We did have a story on the site today about what we might see in terms of a lineup for Orlando City. I guess I just got to get your key matchups and predictions for a really big matchup with Atlanta United, and to try to avoid going winless against this expansion team in our first year of meeting them.
Yeah. And of course it's at Atlanta, and it's going to be a playoff type atmosphere there, because we're trying to climb back into it. They're trying to stay in it. So it's going to be a hard road to go down. Like we said, especially with so many players unavailable. If we get Spector back, I feel a little better. If obviously the back line, you're going to have Toya and Setter out there just like they usually are. If Spector's back and playing back to, the level that we expect from him, and you have Tommy Redding out there, I think that's – we're going to – obviously we need to score goals, but I think that Kyle got that goal, and so maybe that breaks it loose for him. Dom's got to score at some point. So I feel a little bit better there, especially with since Kaká's out, that Giles is going to be starting at that 10, and Yoshi's going to continue to do what he does. So I feel a little bit better about the attack. Where we're going to have to, shore things up is going to be in the defense, especially – with Atlanta having Hector Villalba, I never can say his name right.
Villalba,
and then Almiron. Their attack is quite potent. So for me, it's how does the defense hold up against Atlanta? Can they keep them off the off the scoreboard? If they can, I think we can maybe squeak out something, but that's going to be the key for me. As far as a prediction, it's a heart versus a head thing. So it's late in the season, and since I didn't get to make the Dumb and Dumber joke, I'm going to go with the heart, and I'm going to say, we have another 2-1 win, and this one doesn't take 118,000 minutes to get done.
I'm going to agree with you on the key matchups. I think the keeping Martinez and Villalba and Assad and Almiron quiet is very difficult, especially at their place. The thing that really they do well that you just don't see in this league is the dummies, is the perfect positioning to where one guy knows he could just let the ball go and his teammate's going to get onto it. Mm-hmm. You don't see that really with anyone else. It's very impressive, and it's very scary from a defensive standpoint. And when you're dealing with a veteran center back who's seen a lot of it but has been out of action and is going to be hard pressed to play 90 minutes at a high level, and a kid. Regardless of which kid that Spector plays with, if indeed it is Spector getting the start, it really is a difficult proposition to try to keep that team off the board. That's the key matchup. Keeping them off the board is going to be difficult. We're going to need the Joe Bendick that gets saved a week to win this game, or to even get a result in this game. And we might need two or three candidates for save of the week to get there. So it's my prediction is going to be 2-1 Atlanta, and Villalba scores in the 90th minute. It's just because that's the way that the trend has been, and I'm really hoping that I'm wrong, and I really hope that my lighthearted prediction on Twitter when I said the other day that I was really excited about beginning the 7-game winning streak to end the season, really hoping that stays intact and we get to get to celebrate another one. But we shall see. It's you know, it was a very emotional game for Atlanta last week, so maybe they'll come down a little bit from that. They're certainly going to feel confident. Will they feel overconfident maybe being at home and, you know, knowing that we're coming in without having a lot of good results this summer? I don't know. It doesn't seem like a team that takes anybody lightly. It seems like a team that's pretty well prepared. And, you know, it's kind of a shame, actually, because I don't like them.
Yeah, no, we definitely don't like them. And but as you said a couple times during this podcast, stranger things happen. So
And I can't wait. And I can't wait for Stranger Things Part 2 to happen, actually, the second season on Netflix, because I really like that show. But yeah, we'll see what happens, and hopefully. Hopefully the Lions will surprise us as they did in Washington. I was not expecting what we saw the first half of that game, and certainly once the adversity hit, I wasn't expecting them to be able to preserve that lead, and they actually did. So they do still have the ability to surprise these Lions, and it's nice to see that at this point in the season. Dave, before we get out of here, I have a final Ask the Mainland podcast question for you, and I'll be happy to answer in response too. Since we didn't give a lot of questions, I just want to know, how did you really spend your time in the tedious hours of Sunday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, Monday, while you're waiting for the hurricane to both arrive and then pass through?
Well, as I said, since I never lost power or internet or anything like that, I watched movies. I played some PlayStation. I watched the Cowboys beat the Giants, which is always a fun time. And had plenty of whiskey and rum and beer around, which is what we do. We Floridians do during a hurricane. Is, you know, that last stop is always at the it's always at the liquor store. So I also fortunately had one of my older sons come out and come over and hang out with me, so that was nice. But it was basically like a little mini vacation.
Oh, cool. Yeah, it's I think that's what the, you know, what local law enforcement wants is for you to go drink as much as you can during these storms. I think that's their highest recommendation. That's cool. It was a little bit fatiguing to deal with the, you know, just watching the news and watching the storm approach and getting the latest track every 3 hours and that kind of thing. It can get a little much. So I Netflixed the hell out of my weekend. I was able to basically finish off the Marvel hero universe, Marvel Comics universe, finishing off Luke Cage, Iron Fist, and the Defenders all over the last few days. So
excellent.
I was able to get all caught up with that. I know a lot of people don't like the – didn't care for Iron Fist, but I didn't really have too much of a problem with him, at least in the early going of the season. It was a little bit more tedious late in the season when this supposedly Zen dude who's been raised by monks is suddenly like pissed off all the time and won't listen to anybody and is like yelling, don't tell me to be calm.
No, like, you know? But they actually did explain that he had basically had been repressing his emotions into a little black ball of, you know, whatever. And that's what they told him to do at the monastery. So,
yeah,
you know,
Well, you know, and what's his name? Bakudo taught him how to reset his chi, and then all of a sudden he couldn't reset his chi anymore, and it was kind of annoying. So it was like, wait a minute, didn't this guy just show you what to do when that happened?
Right. Now I do have one hurricane preparation hint for you in particular, because I know you like. I have plenty of growlers. If you're not filling the growlers with beer for the hurricane, they make a great way to have water available rather than going out and buying bottled water. And if you have as many growlers as I do, which is a lot, I had 4 64-ounce and 8 32-ounce growlers filled with water. So I was good if anything happened just mm-hmm. from growler fills of water.
Yeah, you don't want to be stuck doing the whole boiled water thing like a lot of our listeners and certainly a lot of our mainland readers are having to do right now. And we do the same thing. We're like, if we have pitchers, pots, pans, whatever it takes. We fill that stuff mm-hmm. with water. That way we've got water that we know is drinkable right off the bat, or we can use it to cook, or we can give it to the cats, you know, whatever, without having to boil a ton of water. We also filled a bunch of Ziploc bags and threw them in the freezer. So that right. was another cool. There's a lot of cool little tricks that you can do, which hopefully won't anybody in our area won't need the rest of the hurricane season. Hopefully we'll have a nice quiet hurricane season, even though there's other storms out there.
And it does remind me that a lot of breweries, both in Orlando and I know in Tallahassee, and I would imagine other places, offered up to fill water for anybody for free.
Yeah, filtered water.
And, of course,
water.
They've got
yeah.
filtered water, right, because they've got these, you know, huge tanks for making the beer, and when they make the beer, they try and get the best water they can. So, you know, kudos to a lot of the breweries who did that around the state. And it's if you don't support your local breweries, if you drink beer like Michael and I do, and you don't support your local breweries, well, shame on you, because they're generally speaking almost every single one of them is bearded, because brewers simply have beards, and then. They're just fantastic, lovely people most of the time. I mean, you have to be to do that job. So, go out and thank a brewer.
Yeah, I know 1010 and the Broken Strings Black Cauldron folks were doing those growler fills with water. So, you definitely hit up your local brewery if you can't get out to the store early and everybody's out of water. You could definitely go get some growlers filled and or other containers even they were filling, mm-hmm. you know, to help people out, which is it's really awesome. It's a very good sense of community. And, you know, there's really nobody that cares more about their community than, you know, local artisans. And that's what these craft brewers are. They're local artisans and, you know, local businesses. So they are invested in your well-being so that they don't lose more customers to the storm.
Absolutely.
All right, so that'll do it for episode number 103 of the Mainland Podcast. Dave, we'll be back next week to discuss Orlando City at Atlanta United. We'll talk a little bit of OCB at St. Louis FC. We'll have, of course, the U.S. Women's National Team against New Zealand and a pair of friendlies to discuss. We'll have I don't know. We'll probably talk a little bit about Brazil and Australia, their friendlies and how those things went. And it's glad everybody made it. Hopefully by next week, everybody's power will be back on. Everybody's internet will be back on. Everybody's cell service will be back on. everybody will have drinkable water and not have to boil anything. We're really hoping that everybody gets back up and running as quickly as humanly possible. And we'll be back next week to talk about trivial things like soccer and, break all of that down. And as we roll on through this 2017 season. We'll wrap up number 103. On behalf of David Rowe, I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, asking you to please read our stuff online. And we didn't have a 5-star review to read for you this week because I was too lazy to look one up. But we'll do that next week. Give us a review on iTunes. 5-star reviews will be read on the air if you leave a note or comments, and we'll do that. And of course, you can subscribe to us on there or through Google Play or whatever you use, Blog Talk Radio. And please like us on the Facebooks and follow us on the Twitters and all of that good stuff. So I think that's about enough of the advertising, and I will sign off now, as I always do, by saying, please continue to go, City!